Riverlink is a regional nonprofit spearheading the economic and environmental revitalization of the French Broad River and its tributaries as a place to live, work, and play. Since 1987, they have led simultaneous efforts to address water quality concerns throughout the French Broad River Basin, expand public opportunities for access and recreation, and spearhead the economic revitalization of Asheville's Riverfront District. To learn more, go to www.riverlink.org.
Asheville Free Media, AshevilleFM.org. This is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWALP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRSLP out of Columbus, Ohio. Archives of the show can be heard 1 week after airing at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org. And you can contact us with questions, comments, or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. This week on the show, I'll be talking with V, who is an anarchist living in Bloomington, Indiana, and does various forms of prison support work, about the situation in Pendleton Correctional Facility in Indiana, and about the call-in day that they're having tomorrow, the 8th of September, about the blatant racist treatment that inmates are receiving, and also the crackdown on radical organizing. But first, some words from anarchist prisoner Sean Swain.
I have some terrible, terrible news about my situation here at the super duper uber mega ultra hyper turbo mac, and I gotta get this off the chest. At the end of July, prison officials removed me from solitary confinement. My security status was lowered. So you know what this means, right? I'm not dangerous anymore. The state said so. As a matter of fact, I don't even know why you're still listening to me. I bet a random cross-section of the Final Straw listening audience could slap me around and make me wear a bedsheet, dancing on a steel table for cigarettes. The state no longer takes me seriously. It's so humiliating. I'm using the phone in a common area with three other prisoners. Smooth, J-Rock, and Murder say hello. And they told me not to take too long because they've got important calls to make. Next thing you know, these prison system bozos might add insult to injury and wipe out all my insurrectionist anarchist street cred by paroling me. Then I won't be an anarchist prisoner at all. I'll just be some struggling idiot at some random drive-thru who asks you if you want fries with that. All this is very perplexing if you consider what got me here to the super-duper blah-blah-blah max in the first place. They said I was monkey number 4 of the Army of the 12 Monkeys, mastermind of what is now an international terrorist organization. In 2012, the Army of the 12 Monkeys completely disrupted Mansfield Correctional. It was so serious, the FBI was on site within 2 weeks. The 12 Monkeys clogged drains, jammed locks with staples, lit fires, and on numerous occasions shut down production at the Ohio Penal Industries factory. The number 12 was tagged on buildings and in common areas, and staff assaults increased. Guard shacks on the yard were assaulted repeatedly. Prisoners got away with smashing windows. Prison officials had to spend six figures to have the cement floor in the chow hall torn up to replace the collapsed plumbing underneath. And as soon as the job was fixed, somebody poured dry cement down the drains and collapsed the plumbing again. The worst part for prison officials, there were flyers and manuals. Thousands of pages of 12 Monkey advertising all over the prison compound, inviting all prisoners to join in. And they did. Normal prison operations ground to a halt. However irrational their argument, prison fascists decided I was responsible. To send me here, Warden Terry Tibbles, make that former Warden Terry Tibbles, he's now in charge of getting coffee and dispensing baby oil during Director Moore's naked twister games at Central Office. Tibbles designated me for solitary because, in his words, I have an ability to disrupt lower-level security. The whole department food chain signed off on that rationale. Never mind that everybody who works for the DRC has an ability to disrupt lower-level security. Terry Tibbles himself proved that when he let a prisoner lean a ladder against the fence and leave. But Tibbles isn't in the cell next to me. Go figure. Still, the argument was what it was. So the question arises, I think, a legitimate one. How did I just become less dangerous? Think about it. Prison fascists at Mansfield tortured me for a year. Then I spent a year at OSP in total isolation. I survived the most evil regimen the state could throw at me, and I'm now less dangerous? If I previously had an ability to disrupt lower-level security, before and during 2 years of state terror, I should think I would be more capable afterward. I should think the more you torture me, the more I hate you. The more I hate you, the greater the chance I'll try to upset your apple cart. But the state seems to think 2 years of state terror has made me like the state more. Does that make sense? At all? I don't know, maybe I just missed the point. Perhaps when I was a model prisoner at Mansfield, I didn't hate the state enough. So they sent me through this years-long gauntlet to instill in me a respectable amount of rage and fury. That could be. And now that I hate the state, I qualify for lower security. By this thinking, hatred of the state is the secret litmus test for gaining lower security. And that means the more you completely abhor the state's hypocrisy, brutality, and dishonesty, its utter senselessness, the lower in security you go. Right? If that's the case, I hope ODRC Director Gary Moore is listening to this on WCRS in Columbus, while Terry Tibbles slathers him down with baby oils. Because I have a question. Shouldn't I be at minimum camp? Gary, nobody hates you like I do. Get back to me. This is anarchist prisoner Sean Swain from Ohio Supermax Facility. If you're listening... Stop grabbing the phone. I'm on the radio. You are the resistance.
You can write to Sean Swain at Sean Swain, number 243-205, OSP, 878, Coitsville-Hubbard Road, Youngstown, Ohio, 44505. To read some of Sean's writings and learn more about his case, check out seanswain.org. Friday, September 12th at the Orange Peel in Asheville. Join Asheville FM and the Asheville Writers in the Schools for a benefit blowout. It's AFM's 5th anniversary, and we'll be throwing a dance party. Tickets are only $5, and you can get a raffle ticket with that purchase. Doors open at 8 p.m. right after Goombay ends, and the dancing starts at 9. Check out more at ashevillefm.org and look at our latest news. It's not too late to make a donation to the North American Anarchist Black Cross Conference Fund, which would be helping to strengthen networks of folks who work to support our folks on the inside. Resistors in general, who are incarcerated, aid those who are integrating back into post-release, and hopefully keep as many of us dangerous elements as possible out of the prisons in the first place. Most of the fundraising is going to fund the flying of formerly incarcerated anarchists to the conference to share their knowledge. More info can be found at denverabc.wordpress.com by searching Conference 2014. The struggle to get parole for the Move 9 continues. There are upcoming hearings for Edward Eddie Goodman Africa and Michael Davis Africa. The Move 9 parole push is attempting to get folks to call in on Mondays to the Pennsylvania Parole Board to push them to get these prisoners freed. For more information, you can check out move9parole.blogspot.com or check out the interviews The Final Straw did with Ori Lumumba by going to thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org and searching Move 9.
Will you introduce yourself for the radio and tell us a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, my name is V. I live in Bloomington, Indiana, and I work on various anarchist and prison support projects here. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure. It's for a cause that is unfortunately really common in the prison industrial complex. And I think y'all are doing awesome work. Will you tell us a little bit about the Pendleton Correctional Facility in Madison County, Indiana? How many people are imprisoned there, and are there still factories on premises where people are forced to work?
Yeah, of course. So Pendleton Correctional Facility is a max security prison in Pendleton, Indiana, which is northeast of Indianapolis. It also has a minimum security dorm outside of this max security area. And in 2013, the population was about 1,800. In terms of the factories at Pendleton, there are no longer factories there where inmates are forced to work. However, the elimination of jobs has played a part in the pacification of inmates, which I'll describe later, and the control of movement, both ideas and people. They still house the correctional industrial facility, but most prisoners behind the walls there don't have jobs and aren't offered jobs. So the conditions are nearing complete lockdown. Prisoners are in their cells most of the day. So while this forced work is gone, people aren't in a better place because of extreme isolation.
That sounds awful. I didn't know that it was a maximum security prison.
Yeah, it's both max and minimum. It's confusing a little bit.
For sure. I do. One of the only things I know about it is that John Dillinger was imprisoned there, who was that bank robber, that famous bank robber who was housed there, or like forced to live there in like the 1920s or so, I think. And I think maybe that goes into the next question that I have, which is, so Pendleton is pretty infamous for grossly inhumane treatment, like enforced shackling and multiple unexplained stabbing incidents over the years. To your knowledge, are things like that going on in this facility today?
So most of the brutality that you're describing is a thing of the past, but it doesn't mean that people are being treated any better. So this harsh treatment, like shackling and unexplained stabbings, are less blatant. So control and punishment has evolved throughout Pendleton's history. Mm-hmm. Currently, it's more likely that prisoners will be driven insane through their continual lockdown that I described before, mm-hmm. Through the lack of mental health services, lack of school or jobs, or just activities to pass their times. But there are still numerous incidents of violence, mostly perpetrated by organized racist correctional officers against the Black prison population. And something else interesting to point out is a lot of those responsible for the brutality of the past have gained rank within the IDOC. They've become captains, lieutenants, working in internal affairs, most of which are still at Pendleton. And they hold tight to their past as brutally violent correctional officers. Mm-hmm. And so because of this, it's become the norm as of recent for them to exact administrative versus physical revenge against prisoners who challenge them.
Is the isolation you're talking about a solitary confinement, or does it take other forms as well?
Some forms are solitary confinement, and I'll go into some examples of that. Mm-hmm. But mostly, as I described before, Pendleton is nearing complete lockdown. So prisoners, regardless of if they're kept in the SHU, are in their cells for most of the day.
Gotcha. You mentioned the super racist treatment that people have been being forced to undergo. Would you outline what has been going on in Pendleton regarding the blatant racism and targeting of radical organizing? And also, in contrast, would you tell us about how managements are treating openly white supremacist groups?
Yeah, of course. Repression along the lines of race local organizing has taken a few different forms. And so the first form is specific new African and politically active prisoners have been targeted. And then there's also the other form of mailroom censorship. So one new African prisoner was recently transferred from Newcastle because of political organizing to Pendleton, where at Pendleton, internal affairs are seeking revenge on his past organizing. Mm. So he's been threatened with state court for alleged weapon possession. And in comparison, the Aryan Brotherhood members have recently been caught with about 5 or so knives each, and they've faced much lighter consequences. So it's clear that these men are being targeted and exclusively punished by the administration, mm-hmm. while the administration just allows the Aryan Brotherhood and other racist groups to form and thrive. In terms of mailroom censorship, at the Newcastle mailroom, it's a standard procedure to throw away or just simply deny prisoners access to anything political, as well as anything related to Black liberation and empowerment. Mm-hmm. And at the Pendleton mailroom, a new policy has been set in place where there's the banning of books aside from 3 publishers, and 2 of which are religious. So mailroom censorship is interesting specifically to me. I think both of them are. But radical reading material is so valuable in fostering connections between prisoners and enabling political organizing in such a hostile and isolating environment. Like when people are being placed in the SHU, when people are facing nearing complete lockdown. And so this censorship is also clearly a move to stifle political action. Can I tell you a story from the past at Pendleton?
Absolutely.
Okay, so I did a little research. There's a book called Down, Reflections on Prison Resistance in Indiana that was put out in 2012 by folks who live here. And I was reading about the history of Pendleton. And in 1985, there was a prison riot in response to a prisoner being severely beaten by the guards. And they also used tear gas in the cell block. And during this riot, prisoners fought the guards. They also held the guards hostage in the cell block for about 17 hours. And at the end of this, 6 guards were hospitalized with stab wounds, and 4 were in critical condition. And the standoff ended when the DOC agreed to 22 demands of the prisoners. And these demands included allowing prisoners to be politically active without intimidation and ending mailroom censorship. So even though control and punishment has taken a different form within the years, it's clear that these are still issues stemming from 1985, probably before then.
That's absolutely incredible. And also maybe I'm being overly cynical, but like, kind of want to be like, oh, fuck again. Come on, you guys. It can be so hypocritical and completely soulless and, you know, inhuman about people's rights and like people's personal space and like their right to organize and their right to fight back.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's not surprising because it's prison, but it's interesting to read that the DOC signed these demands, but as I said, also not surprising that these are still issues that prisoners are facing today. It just seems to be more subtle, maybe,
because
guards aren't openly firing at prison riots or tear gassing cell blocks, but this repression is still in place, and that's obvious.
For sure. Do you think that the fact that those agreements were signed back in the 1980s will help people fight the current repression at all, or what's your opinion on that?
I'm not actually sure. I just read about that recently, and I was pretty shocked by the entire story. I'm fairly cynical. I don't think that will do anything, but possibly. I'm wondering if, you know, if they signed it just to be like, we signed the thing, will you stop holding us hostage and stabbing us? If they would keep it, I don't know.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, hopefully something like will be able to happen. Maybe on that note, how can people find more info about this? Is there like a website?
So there's a website for a group called Indiana Queer Prison Solidarity that happens here. And what that group does is we write to queer prisoners in Indiana, hoping to establish bonds of solidarity between the walls. And there have been some updates posted on there. You can also just find out about that project if you go to that site. But there will be further updates about the call-in, et cetera, basically anything related to prison. And that site is indianaqps.noblogs.org. Also, as I mentioned before, this doesn't have to do with current issues of prison in Indiana, but the book Down, Reflection on Prison Resistance in Indiana is really interesting if you just want to learn more about the history.
You mentioned the call-in. Would you tell us a little bit more about that? And it's happening tomorrow, which is the 8th of September. And what are the numbers that people can call, and what is recommended that people say?
Yeah, so tomorrow there will be a demo in front of the IDOC from 11 to 1 p.m. So if you're in Indiana and you're listening to this, please come out. But we're also asking people to join us in calling in to the IDOC office and the Pendleton mailroom to demand that they abolish the stifling of radical politics and Black empowerment, specifically through mailroom censorship, and that they allow inmates to receive books from any publisher they choose. We're asking people to call in from 11 to 1 p.m. in hopes that we will flood their phones and voicemails. But you can call whenever you would like. The DOC central office number is 317-233-6984. And the Pendleton mailroom supervisor number is 765-778-2107, extension 1264.
Word, and that's from 11 to 1 tomorrow?
11 to 1, yeah.
Cool. That is all the questions that I have. Do you have anything else that you wanted to add?
I guess something to add could be that while we're asking people to call in, to the Indiana DOC office and the Pendleton mailroom, just think about prisons and jails in your area and what you can do where you are. Always try to write to people and establish relationships with people in prison. Please don't forget about them. And obviously any acts of solidarity, whatever form they take against prison, is always encouraged.
I entirely agree, and that's super solid. V, thank you so much for talking with us. It's been a pleasure, and I wish you all the best in struggle.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me and letting me talk about these issues in Indiana. We really appreciate it.
We've been speaking with V about racial and radical targeting in Indiana's Pendleton Correctional Facility.
Right now you're hearing To Crawl Under One's Own Skin by Neurosis from their album Souls at Zero. After this, you'll be hearing The Purity of Isolation by Falls of Raros from their split with Panopticon released earlier this year. This is Corrosion Fields by Black Cobra from their album Invernal. Black Cobra will be playing at the Mothlight Nashville on Wednesday the 10th. More info at themothlight.com. Next up is Fall of Ephephra from their split with Down to Agony. This track is called No Longer Human. Last up, we'll hear Exilent with No One from their album Born to Struggle. We'll be right back.
Asheville Free Media, ashevillefm.org. This is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWALP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRSLP out of Columbus, Ohio. Archives of the show can be heard 1 week after airing at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can contact us with questions, comments, or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. Again, those numbers for the call-in day tomorrow are area code 317-233-6984 for the DOC Central Office, and the Pendleton Mailroom Supervisor can be reached at area code 765-778-2107, extension 1264. Also, if you'd like to hear more about this issue, you can visit indianaqps.noblogs.org. Thanks for listening, and until next week.